It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good evening, Brett. And the president's admonitions this evening in this late afternoon press conference did not come from anything he learned from that private meeting with Donald Trump in the Oval Office, which by all accounts went very, very well. It's because of the sheer magnitude of the responsibility of holding the office and how it changes one's perspective. He also urged all Americans to honor the election results.
Those who didn't vote for him have to recognize that that's how democracy works. That's how this system operates.
After those words to the critics of Trump's victory and to some of his newly appointed staff, the president addressed the decimated Democratic Party and what new direction it should seek. He said, while it needs to make changes, he also added that it should not come at the expense of its core mission.
The Democrats should not waver on our core beliefs and principles. The belief that we should have an economy that works for everybody, not just a few. The belief that America, at its best, is inclusive and not exclusive.
And he spoke from experience about how the Oval Office changes one's experience and one's perspective.
He will find shaken up pretty quick because reality has a way of asserting itself.
The president cited the case of Obamacare specifically, which President-elect Trump has promised to repeal and replace while preserving certain elements of it. He said the decision becomes harder when you're faced with the real-life consequences of it all.
Okay, well, what happens to those 20 million people who have health insurance? Are you going to just kick them off and suddenly they don't have health insurance?
I'm so happy that we have the wisdom of President Barack Obama being passed on to President Trump and also to all of us, just to tell us, you know, how to live and how to think and what American values are and that's not who we are, et cetera, et cetera. I'm so glad for his infinite wisdom. Of course not. I mean, the things that he says, the Democrats need to continue to hang on to our values, making sure that everyone has economic opportunity and not just a few. Are you kidding me? And the reality is that the Democratic policies, and they're not the traditional policies of the Democratic Party. The policies of Barack Obama are socialist, international Marxist. It is to destroy the middle class. That's really what's happened. For all of their talk and blah, 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 that's exactly what they've done. That's why the middle class is reeling, and that's why the middle class came out in droves on this election, desperate, really, watching their jobs leave, watching their factories close, their coal mines shut down, watching their Obamacare premiums increase, their deductibles soar, you know, just can't, the college tuition for their kids, they get no help. They get no help on college tuition. The middle class has had their backs broken under Barack Obama's policies. But I digress. That's just one little thing that comes to mind as I hear him pontificating, waxing eloquent. Doug McElway goes on with the report. Let's listen to the rest of it.
The president also made the same case for DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals, the human consequences of deporting young people who are brought into this country by their parents to no fault of their own, takes on a new perspective from the Oval Office.
They did nothing wrong. They've gone to school. They have pledged allegiance to the flag. Some of them have joined the military. They've enrolled in school. By definition, if they're part of this program, they are solid, wonderful young people of good character.
The president also expressed frustration that he was unable to keep his promise to shut down the Guantanamo Bay prison camp. He said, and I'm quoting, "It's true, I haven't been able to close the darn thing because of congressional restrictions that have been placed upon us. What's also true is that we have greatly reduced the population." It's another indication, Brett, that a victory in the White House seldom amounts to total victory.
You know, the part that they didn't talk about, I heard this in passing yesterday. He was bragging about how his administration has something about followed the law and legality more than any administration ever. He actually said that. I wish I had asked Adam to pull that. It just occurred to me. So, you know, blah, blah, blah is all I can say. Even the Daily Mail, the London Daily Mail, who is not a fan of Donald Trump, their headline on this was "Condescending Obama. Trump can't possibly keep his promises as POTUS." So he spent a lot of his time talking about how Donald Trump was going to have to face reality. This office has a way of waking you up. What else did he say? Talking about repealing and replacing. Well, you heard just what he said about the 20 million people who'd been added to. Look, it doesn't matter if you have insurance. If you don't have coverage, just because you have on paper something that says you have insurance, if you can't see a doctor and all you have is a $5,000 deductible and you still have to pay for it, it doesn't matter that you have the piece of paper. It's worthless. It's meaningless. You know, before Obamacare, people that had emergencies or had problems would go to the emergency or had problems would go to the emergency room and they had to be treated. People were covered in other ways. So this has just been a big boondoggle for the left. They've made tons of money off of this and gained a ton of power. And that was the point in the first place. I'm not going to go anymore with what he said, because he said a lot of things and I don't want to waste my time because I have lots more things to tell you. I thought this was interesting. This is an article by Daniel Halper. The president, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Allow me a little bit of humor here. Sardonic wit, I guess. The president will travel to Athens on Monday, then to Berlin on Wednesday, finally Lima, Peru on Friday. In addition, he's going to speak with, going to meet with Greek and German leaders, President François Hollande of France, President Mariano Rajoy of Spain, Prime Minister Matteo Renzi of Italy, and Prime Minister Theresa May of the United Kingdom. And so, but this is what made me laugh. Daniel Halper said the trip scheduled before this month's presidential election was supposed to be a celebratory world tour for Obama, but now has transformed into something quite different. Yes, I guess so. And thank God for that. All right, this is the best news of the day. Are you ready? Are you ready? I didn't hear this on any news yesterday, but I saw it in the Blaze this morning, and here is the way it goes. You remember that Oregon official who mercilessly went after Aaron and Melissa Klein, the cake bakers, who fined them and persecuted them? They had to shut down their business. They're operating online. They had to pay a couple $100,000 in fines. Basically, just unbelievably stepped outside of the bounds of his very low-level, really, position to punish them, and he was allowed to do that. Well, he was running for Secretary of State, very ambitious agenda, promising to do all of these things that a Secretary of State really doesn't do. All of them political, all of them his personal political agenda. Well, he was beaten, and in his place is a Republican who was very conservative. He's the first Republican voted into statewide office in 14 years. His name is Dennis Richardson. And the people of Oregon voted him in against this Avakian, is the name of the guy who was defeated. And here's a thing that they were printing. Avakian is a former lawmaker from Washington County, reporting, I'd say. The Oregon papers were reporting this. Was appointed to his current post in 2009 when he sought an open congressional seat in 2011. This newspaper outlet revealed he'd failed in the past to pay property and income taxes and his bills, including his Oregon State bar dues. And so it goes on and on, talks about his lack of integrity, and now he has he's out of office. He still holds the position on that commission that punished Aaron and Melissa Klein, but maybe this is the beginning of the end for him in public life, and I hope that somehow the Trump team finds a way to reach out an olive branch to all of these people who have paid a terrible price just for simply having a conviction on marriage, or for Joe Arpaio and Arizona, it was on enforcing immigration laws, and on I could go. But I digress. I want to go on because I have more to tell you. Let's see. James Rosen has a report on the transition team. Oh, let's listen a little bit to James, and then I have some stuff to tell you. Here he is.
I know the best people. I know the best managers.
Given Donald Trump's frequent promises to lure the best to work for him and the billionaire's reputation as a savvy, if harsh, judge of personnel.
You're fired.
His first hires as president-elect reflect distinct managerial instincts. In choosing Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus as White House Chief of Staff, Mr. Trump tapped the ultimate Beltway insider, whose mastery of electioneering helped win the White House and whose relationships with lawmakers will prove critical to the Trump legislative agenda.
He brings people together. He gets them to buy in on that shared vision and brings out the best in people to get successful things done.
But Mr. Trump created a co-equal position for Steve Bannon, the campaign CEO appointed chief strategist and senior counselor in the White House. A former naval officer, Bannon brought managerial discipline to the campaign, but under his leadership, the conservative website Breitbart appealed to the alt-right, with headlines that demeaned Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol as a, quote, renegade Jew, and advanced notions like birth control makes women unattractive and crazy.
Breitbart does give me a real pause about sometimes they're going well beyond accepted norms.
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid said through an aide, President-elect Trump's choice of Steve Bannon as his top aide signals that white supremacists will be represented at the highest levels in Trump's White House. Dispatched to defend Bannon was his new co-equal.
So I haven't seen any of these things that people are crying out about. But look, it's a good team. It works. And I think if people saw the last few months in the campaign, it worked very well.
You know, that's just the first part of James' report. But you know, could I just say that that whole term alt-right, I was looking that up. I thought, you know, that's just started in this election cycle. And I think it actually, I know that one of the main drivers, I don't know if they were the originator of this term, was the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center, that disreputable, lying bunch of you-know-whos down in Alabama who call the American Family Association a hate group. Who are champions for LGBT rights, all things Muslim Brotherhood. You know, somehow they got off the rail. They used to be allegedly defending the rights of poor blacks, but boy, that horse left the barn a very long time ago. So alt-right is the new term. I'm not going to use it because it's just one of those terms they make up, and then now I hear everybody repeating it. You know, Steve Bannon, we're going to talk a lot about Steve Bannon actually tomorrow. I'm going to have the Washington editor for Breitbart on with me. We're going to talk about who he is exactly. I can tell you this. He's a former naval officer. He's a graduate of Harvard. There was another credential that he had. I was trying to remember on the top of my head. We'll get to it later. But he was the editor, you know, editor-in-chief of Breitbart for a number of years. It was some of his main staff members are Orthodox Jews. I know them personally. So this whole business about him being, anti-Semitic is just ridiculous. And we'll talk to I'm having trouble thinking this morning. We're going to talk to the editor from Washington tomorrow in the show, Matt Boyle. All right. Now, here's another headline today that you may not hear somewhere else. I'm actually very happy about this. The Trump transition team is made up of a lot of interesting people. Mike Pence is leading it, but I have to tell you, there are a lot of people whose names you don't know who are on that list, who are doing some really, really hard work. And one of the most encouraging things I had this morning and just came in my inbox is that Congressman Mike Rogers has suddenly left the transition planning committee. And that makes me glad because he was the former head of the Intelligence Committee in the House. You have to understand that Mike Rogers' wife was involved in the Blue Mountain Group that staffed the Benghazi embassy with enemies. I'm not saying they did it on purpose, but carelessly staffed them with enemies who turned on our men and women, including the ambassador. That never came out. John Boehner refused to have a Benghazi committee because I think he was covering for Mike Rogers. And Mike Rogers then somehow makes his way on the transition team. He's been bad on the Muslim Brotherhood issue, and now he's off. And I am delighted. All right, coming up next, someone whose name will be familiar to you. He's been a real champion, and his life might have been different the day after the election if Donald Trump had not won. We're going to ask him about that. His name is Tom Fitton. He's the president of Judicial Watch. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Thank you.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio, are supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's families with an S. And leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com. twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know.
The church in America is in a state of spiritual emergency. Though we have access to more resources and biblical teaching than at any time in history, we are not characterized by the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit. Every time in Scripture when God's people cried out in humble, desperate, repentant oneness, He responded in favor of their prayers. Every time. Today, across our nation, God is waking up believers from our slumber to earnestly pray for revival in brokenness, humility, and repentance. Since only Christ can save, heal, and revive, let's join together to turn from every sin God reveals to us, pray with urgency for spiritual recovery and awakening, and unite with other believers in spreading the hope of Christ-centered revival.
Unite with others for one night, one hope, one cry. From Lake Point Champion Center in Cartersville, Georgia, Sunday at 5 Central on American Family Radio and OneCry.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. Millennials seem to have lost their collective minds over the election of Donald Trump. In recent days, the weeping and anguish has given way to near anarchy. They've laid siege to major American cities, blocking streets, shutting down commerce, terrorizing innocent civilians. Donald Trump supporters have been bullied and battered, homes and churches vandalized. Yet President Obama and Hillary Clinton have refused to tell the rampaging mob to stand down. Even if they did, I doubt it would matter. This is the age of the entitlement generation, perpetually offended millennials, infected by microaggressions, pampered in their safe spaces, and their feelings got hurt when they did not get their way on election day. So the rampaging mobs are not so much about making a political statement as they are about temper tantrums by a bunch of spoiled brats. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Fox News confirmed today that four congressional committees have opened investigations into six central allegations against Hillary Clinton and her aides. Investigators are probing whether Clinton lied about her email practices during October 2015 testimony, the mishandling of classified information, obstruction of justice, destruction of government records, the Clinton Foundation, as well as allegations of a quid pro quo between a senior State Department executive and an FBI agent. Republican Senators Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson, who was traveling and spoke to Fox by phone, said investigators are pressing ahead and the inquiries were not dependent on the election.
It's one of the messages of this election, that the public is disgusted when they see double standards, when they think people in high places, high government officials, can get away with what ordinary citizens can't. So I think it's extremely important to follow this thing through to.
On Fox's Sunday Morning Futures, the Republican chairman of the House Government Oversight Committee also said the chapter is not closed.
It's this huge, massive mess that has to be cleaned up. So we would be remiss if we just dismissed it and moved on. We have a lot of things that we have to fix so it never, ever happens again.
During a weekend conference call with top donors, Hillary Clinton blamed the FBI Director James Comey for her defeat. Clinton said Comey's decision to reopen the email case 11 days before the election put her campaign on the defense and blunted her ability to make a strong closing argument. On the campaign trail, candidate Trump called for a special prosecutor to investigate Clinton. But on 60 Minutes last night, the president-elect took a softer approach, emphasizing jobs, health care, and immigration come first.
You called her crooked, Hillary, said you wanted to get in jail. Your people and your audiences kept saying, lock him up.
Yeah. Well, she did some bad things. I mean, she did some bad things.
I know, but a special prosecutor?
I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them. They're good people. I don't want to hurt them.
No committee contacted today. Expect hearings before Thanksgiving, Brett.
All right, that was Catherine Herridge on Fox last night. Very interesting, a lot to talk about. And I'm sure our next guest has a lot of comments on that. No one has fought the Clinton cabal more successfully and more faithfully and without regard to the political winds than Judicial Watch led by Tom Fitton. And if I have to tell you, the day after the election and as the election was approaching, Tom and Judicial Watch was one of the first groups I thought about when I kind of pondered the circumstances of a Hillary Clinton presidency. And so I've asked Tom to join me this morning, first of all, to celebrate the fact, Tom, that you're not in jail this morning. I'm glad to hear that. Good morning.
I'm not in Elba. I won't be going to Elba. I won't be exiled. That's right. Thank you, Sandy.
You know what, Tom, seriously, did you guys kind of have a plan? If Mrs. Clinton had won the nomination, you can bet she would have brought all of her powers and forces down to bear on Judicial Watch. Did you guys have a plan about how you would respond to all that?
No, I mean, other than we were expecting, payback in some way, we weren't sure how it would come. But, you know, our chief plans were just to continue our work. And, you know, no matter who won, and because, as you point out, the in the segment beforehand of the audio of Catherine Herridge, one of the Congressmen kind of said, the accountability is important. We have to keep on keeping on. And, you know, Mr. Trump is going to be a politician, it looks like, just as others have been before him. And we can't rely on the politicians to police themselves. And that's why Judicial Watch is so successful, not because we're brilliant, although we've got brilliant lawyers and we're good at what we do, it's because in the land of the blind in Washington, D.C., the one-eyed man is king. And we're the only ones asking questions and willing to go to court for it in any significant way.
Tom, let's talk for a second about, look, some people, most of the Republican leaders, this is their pattern. After the Clinton administration, I'll never forget the same thing. They rushed to hush up all of the terrible things, really, the Clintons had done, including stealing stuff from the White House, destroying public property, just unbelievable things. So, no, let's go on. Let's move on. So they did move on. And some people feel that that's the way to go. I heard last night on Fox several say the same thing. And now we hear Trump echoing the same thing. Why is it important to hold the Clintons accountable?
Well, because in many ways, it's not just about the Clintons. This is a Clinton scandal. It's an Obama scandal. It's an FBI scandal. It's a Justice Department scandal. It's a State Department scandal. It's a scandal involving major corporations who are paying to play with the State Department and the Foundation. It involves foreign nationals and foreign governments who are also bribing and being extorted with the Clinton Foundation and Clinton Inc. and the State Department. It's about the way Washington works, and for a candidate and incoming president who cut his teeth on that very issue in terms of battling the corrupt forces in Washington to say he doesn't want to hurt the Clintons because they're nice people, I don't know if he was just saying that to mollify the interviewer on 60 Minutes who was hostile, but my gosh, it's all a big joke, his campaign is, if that's going to be his approach. And there'll be nothing significant done by his Justice Department.
It does remind me
certainly by Congress.
It does remind me very much of the way the Bushes handled the Clintons. Like, ah ha ha ha, nothing to see here. And then, you know, Clinton became like the other son to George Herbert Walker Bush, and we all knew that there were serious problems. It was not a laughing matter. And I would argue, Tom, that because justice was never done then, it only became worse. You cannot cover these things up, and I totally agree with you. There has to be a line in the sand so that people understand here in Washington and around the country that there is a right and there is a wrong and there is justice.
There has to be, and this doesn't mean that Hillary Clinton goes to jail necessarily. It does mean, though, that the Justice Department does a thorough investigation, and the FBI finally does a thorough investigation. I can recall Donald Trump saying on more than one occasion on the campaign trail, what a joke and the FBI investigation was and the Justice Department investigation was. Is he saying it's going to be a joke still under his administration? I hope not.
You know, it reminds me of something I've actually shared with my audience, but I was in Cambodia probably about 10 years ago. And, of course, we all know about Cambodia and the killing fields and how... But the story that I learned there was that in the Khmer Rouge, the communist Cambodians, were neighbors. You know, they lived next door to the people that actually lined them up and shot them in the head and threw them in the pits and stacked up their skulls and did the most unspeakable things to one another. And even still, Tom, no one has ever been called to account. And by all accounts, when I was there doing interviews, the people of Cambodia were sort of in a malaise and a bit of a depression and confusion because nothing had ever been done to draw a line in the sand and to punish people who had killed their own people. Now, this is not that extreme, but I maintain that this whole business of justice brings sanity to a culture and to us personally. If there's accountability for our actions, I think we're making a huge mistake if we let the Clintons off the hook completely. I know you agree with that.
I agree, and I know the focus is going to be on passing legislation, which is all well and good, and legislation is going to pass just, in my view, naturally. I know there will be opposition to changing the status quo, but it's going to happen, and that President Trump is not going to have to spend a lot of political capital on getting things like that done. But what he really needs to do, and this is the political capital that he has, that he needs to spend, is to clean up Washington, and this is job one. And if he doesn't do that, we just pass the typical Republican-oriented legislation. You know, you cut your taxes, you mess with the health care, and I'm sure it'll make a mess of it a little bit more, in addition to repealing Obamacare, and then they'll mess with it a little bit more. People are going to see the same old Washington in the end.
You know, I need to say that Tom has written several books, a whole series called Corruption Chronicles, but his most current one is Clean House, and certainly... that's what he lives and breathes every single day. And so, Tom, with that, I know that, you know, you guys haven't skipped a beat. Even, I think, the day before the election, you were in court. What are you doing? Where are we now? Where are you now with your investigation into the misdeeds of the Clintons?
Well, we're still asking, for instance, for Mrs. Clinton's testimony. We're still getting emails. We'll be taking more discovery, I suspect. We're in court fighting with her now to try to get her to answer some of the questions she's refused to answer under oath. So I don't know what Trump is going to do and Congress is going to do, but, we always just assume we'd be doing it on our own anyway, and that's what we're going to keep on doing.
I noticed, in your latest report, you said that the State Department is asking, 5 years to look over 31,000 Clinton documents? 5 years, they're asking for that much time to look over it.
Yeah.
And yet the FBI said that they were able to get through, 600 and something thousand off the Anthony Weiner email in 5 days? I mean, that really is astounding.
Well, one is an obvious cover-up. The other is also a massive cover-up. And, you can go super fast to pretend they'll review documents if you're doing a criminal investigation, and obviously no one believes that was done properly. Or you could just say it takes forever and a day to get through the records, which is also a similar effect of covering it up. We help the judges think otherwise. But on the other hand, there's going to be new officials at the State Department. I don't know, is it Giuliani, I guess, is the latest. That to me, is job one for administration officials as they come in under the Trump regime, is to start opening up these agencies finally to the American people.
I did think about that this morning and had to chuckle. I'm chuckling about a lot of things these days. But Giuliani, I thought, was kind of a strange pick for state. But then I thought, he's going to go in there in the hornet's nest of what Mrs. Clinton has left, and he will have the will to go in there and do what he can to clean that place out. So it's actually kind of a great place to put his skills, don't you think?
It's kind of ironic to have a prosecutor running the State Department. That will be the case, that's for sure.
All right. So you have actually found, do you think that these email that Mrs. Clinton never turned over has, do you think that any of the ones that the FBI has turned over or any of these new ones that you haven't seen from state, are some of those that there have been so hidden that maybe she exchanged with the president? Any idea about that?
Well, they've listed the ones she's exchanged with the president. I don't know if there are others that she exchanged that aren't out there yet or that we don't know about, because she did delete emails and they may be permanently deleted. We don't know. But the president doesn't want us to see those records. The Justice Department has told us in court that there's they want to withhold them, and they are providing legal reasons for withholding them, and we're going to have to battle that. And it's, you know, the funny thing is, Danny, you know, just getting the documents is the first part of the battle. You don't get all the information in the documents sometimes, and if it's withheld unlawfully, you got to fight that in court. So we'll be talking about Clinton documents for some time. And as I said, it's not more than just about the Clinton regime. It's about Obama and the rest. So Clinton is a stalking horse for the way Washington works. And it's no surprise that Republicans, once they win an election, don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, and that's always their knee-jerk reaction, path of least resistance. And I think people are fed up with that. And so we'll see if something happens. You know, there was a story just this morning on the Clinton Foundation, maybe you saw this. It looks like the Swiss Foreign Ministry did donate 500,000 francs to the Clinton Foundation at the same time that Switzerland and the U.S. were locked in a dispute over tax evasion. In other words, the Swiss, they thought, were helping U.S. clients dodge taxes. And so they were under investigation by the U.S. And so suddenly the Foreign Ministry donates 500,000 francs to the Clinton Foundation. Now the Swiss are getting upset about that. I thought that was amusing, too, that finally, Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I just that these countries are now learning from all of our, you know, reporting and from the Trump candidacy. They're learning that they've been duped, and maybe some of their people have been corrupt. I just think that's interesting.
It's true, and I know there are other countries that are big controversies of all the money that was spent on the Clinton Foundation. But on the other hand, Clinton Foundation made it clear if you wanted to get attention from the Obama administration and the Clinton State Department, you need to give them money. So, you know, maybe it's kind of like running an intelligence operation. You just cover all your bases and spread a little money around so you don't get screwed by the United States government. You take care of the Clinton gang. It's really a what an extortion operation. What a racketeering operation they ran at the State Department. And no wonder these corporations and these foreign governments made the calculation to give the Clinton Foundation money in order to get a special hearing, or at least to be able to get a special hearing if needed with the State Department.
And I think no wonder Mrs. Clinton was so conciliatory, finally, when she spoke on Wednesday morning, and also President Obama. I wonder if they don't know and understand that they are in legal jeopardy and trying to sort of grease the skids. That's what occurred to me. And does that seem like a possibility to you?
Hey, you know, if you get a chance to be nice to the guy who could put you in jail or his appointees could put you in jail, why not take that opportunity? And as you point out, Obama, in the least as a witness, is not a co-conspirator with Mrs. Clinton. And if there were a serious criminal investigation, certainly he'd be a witness, in the least.
So, Tom, we just have a minute left. Do you expect that the investigations of Judicial Watch will be made easier by a Trump win or harder? What do you think?
I'm hopeful it will be made easier, but I'm just expecting more of the same. That we'll have to be in court repeatedly to get access to basic government information, that the bureaucracies will continue to stonewall, and that the new administration will see why it's convenient to be secretive as opposed to transparent and following the law. And I hope it changes. I know the incoming president has suggested it will change, but the siren song of the establishment is a strong one, and the establishment doesn't want you to know what it's up to when it comes to operating the government.
All right, Tom, thanks so much. By the way, his latest book is called Clean House, in which he talks about all that he knows, and it's a big book because he knows a lot. But Judicial Watch has been on the front lines, and we are so grateful, and grateful to Tom and his leadership. Let me just tell you, Tom is so respected here in Washington because he holds the line, and we're grateful for that. Tom, thank you so much for your time this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome, Sandy. Good talking to you.
All right. All right, Sandy Rios back in just a second because there is more news. Back in a second.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your healthcare with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of healthcare. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. Healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. Healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek.
People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. And a lot of people find it attractive that Christianity might be false. And so they tend not to either investigate it or they dismiss it or they vociferously object to it because a creator interferes with what they want to do.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek, Saturday mornings at 9 Central and Sunday afternoons at 4 Central on AFR Talk.
Dave?
Over here, John. Thanks for meeting me like this.
What are we doing in here?
Well, you're one of the only people I know who shares my Christian beliefs. And this is the only place I know we won't offend anyone.
Don't cave to the pressures of society. Stand. Blog and share your thoughts on subjects that matter. See what others are saying and join the discussion at The Stand. Visit afa.net/The Stand.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The radical left seeks through vilification to neutralize those that they consider to be formidable adversaries. Generally speaking, the more formidable, the more vitriol. Evidently, electorally challenged leftists are absolutely panicked over President-elect Donald Trump's selection of Stephen Bannon as his counselor and chief strategist, and with good reason. Few people in public life today have a keener mind, a clearer vision, a stronger attachment to the Constitution and the freedoms it guarantees, and a more demonstrated ability to bring those qualities to bear decisively than Steve Bannon. His success as CEO of the Trump campaign in the critical closing months augurs well for the Trump presidency and poses a serious problem for its assorted critics. So when next you hear Mr. Bannon maligned, remember, those smearing him have been beaten by him. And that's good news for the rest of us. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, the Trump campaign is moving as fast as they can with all due deliberate speed, and they still want to go a little bit faster because they know that they've got a limited amount of time and they have to form a new government. For ambassador to the United Nations, he's considering an openly gay man, Richard Grenell, a former spokesman for four U.S. ambassadors to the United Nations. Steve Manchin, Trump's former campaign finance chairman, as cabinet secretary of the Treasury. And for chairman of the Republican National Committee, the first female leader in decades, current head of the Michigan Republican Party, Ronna McDaniel, Mitt Romney's niece is being floated. She would replace Reince Priebus, who's already been selected as White House chief of staff.
It's really running the operation so that the right people are getting in front of the president, giving the president the right advice at the right time, and then privately advising the president.
Trump's also chosen former campaign CEO Steve Bannon as chief strategist and chief White House counsel. Former campaign manager Kellyanne Conway, considered to be a possible White House spokesman, cast Bannon as part of the mainstream, despite his former role with Breitbart News and the alt-right movement.
People should look at the full resume. He's got a Harvard business degree. He's a naval officer. He has success in entertainment. I don't know if you're aware of that. And he certainly was a Goldman Sachs managing partner.
Members of Trump's inner campaign circle are likely to become part of his administration. Newt Gingrich, who's already dissed Secretary of State in favor of a position as strategic advisor. Rudy Giuliani for a role in law enforcement. Former rival turned loyalist Dr. Ben Carson, a noted neurosurgeon, is being eyed for possible education secretary. Retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who's in line for a defense or national security post. The president-elect has walked back his plan for a border-to-border wall against illegal immigration, something that he did both as a candidate and now as the president-in-waiting.
They're talking about a fence in the Republican Congress. Would you accept a fence?
For certain areas, I would, but certain areas, the wall is more appropriate. I'm very good at this. It's called construction.
Trump also reiterated his softened rhetoric during the campaign that not all illegal immigrants would be deported. First, it would be criminals, gang members, and drug dealers.
After the border is secured and after everything gets normalized, we're going to make a determination on the people that you're talking about who are terrific people. They're terrific people. But we're going to make a determination.
All right. So that's Carl's report. Carl Cameron. Sandy Rios back with you. I've told you Carl is not a fan. So whatever he says, you have to listen for little words like he loves the alt-right in regard to Steve Bannon. And again, let me remind you, I'll be talking about Steve tomorrow in tomorrow's show, a little bit about who he is. Kellyanne sort of fleshed it out a little bit better. But we'll talk about it tomorrow. But and then he said that Trump is taking back his declaration he's going to build a wall. He said simply that some areas might need a fence rather than a wall. So I don't know if that's taking it back. Do you think it's taking it back? If you can't build, like if you're along a mountain ridge and you can't build a wall, is that really taking it back? But of course, that's the way Carl put it. And softening his rhetoric? Not really. He's just choosing to deport criminal aliens first. And so anyway, that's, man, again, the thought of Rudy Giuliani taking over the State Department makes me laugh. It actually does. Can you imagine? Can you even imagine? There's, you know, Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin and all, and for every one of those, there are, you know, there are hundreds, really, that they have padded the State Department with that are not working in the best interests of the United States of America. So that will be amazing, whoever he puts in there. It'll be something to witness. Of course, we won't hear about it. Well, yes, we will. We'll hear about some of it. And I already spoke. I'm going to say this again. Mike Rogers has dropped off the Trump team. He's suddenly gone. And I have to tell you, remember, he was suddenly gone from Congress, too. They said he was going to take a talk show. He was stepping down because he was going to do a talk show. He used to be an FBI agent for Michigan, and then he was very bad on the Muslim Brotherhood issue. And then it appears as though his wife was involved in this Blue Mountain Group, at least in some capacity, that chose the Seventh Something Martyrs Brigade in Benghazi, who turned on Ambassador Stevens in Benghazi that horrible night. And that went silent because people were covering, I believe, for Mike Rogers. And I believe that's the reason he suddenly stepped out of Congress. And now that's come back to bite him again on this transition team. And that's a good thing. Could I just say that's a very good thing? And so then, James, the whole business about immigration, let's talk about that for a second, because you know that Donald Trump has talked about sanctuary cities and how they have to be done away with. And so for some of the nation's mayors of the largest cities who have sanctuary cities have spoken out. And first, you're going to hear the voice of the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and followed by Congressman Luis Gutierrez. Let's listen.
To all the children all the families who are unsure of their place because of what happened on Tuesday, I want you to hear this unambiguously from the city of Chicago. You are safe, you are secure, and you are supported in the city of Chicago.
We are here together as a community, Republicans and Democrats, but first as Americans, to defend our immigrant tradition.
All right, now that was Luis Gutierrez, congressman from Chicago. So hold on to that because I'm going to come back to him in just a second. But I want to finish this thought. So Rahm Emanuel says Chicago's going to be committed to being sanctuary city. Nothing's changing. Also, the mayor of Los Angeles comes out with this statement. Let's see. Eric Garcetti said the city would question Trump's decisions on immigration. In the first day as president, we see something that is hostile to our people, hostile to our city, bad for our economy, bad for our security. We will speak up, speak out, act up, and act out. Maybe he's been listening to the opening of my show. Of course, who is our people? Whose people is he talking about? Is he talking about American citizens? I don't think so. So Los Angeles now is a different people. You know, California's actually been talking about some people there about seceding. And I say, go for it. That's all I can say. Go for it. It's a great, fabulous, beautiful state that the left has ruined. Just ruined. From Hollywood to the beautiful. It still has the natural beauty, but man, the governance is just a disaster. So, I think that I've said, said for a long time, I think we should allow the coast to secede. And then the middle of America, we can just do what we could build a ball between us and them, and they can do whatever they want. They can embrace all kinds of rights. They can erase, you know, women and men from their bathroom doors. They can open their borders. They can destroy coal power plants and do green energy. They can do whatever they want, but they will do it our way. They can do it their way. And we'll see them again in about 10 years and see how things are going. But anyway, so that's some of the major cities around the country. The reason I wanted to mark Luis Gutierrez saying what he said. Luis Gutierrez is a leftist, socialist, international Marxist who believes in open borders. And I have to say that he and Paul Ryan went on a tour around the country together advocating for the same policy on immigration, which makes this next report from James Rosen, which is Cut 5, even more interesting. Let's listen.
Despite such assurances, West Wing veterans and students of its workings predicted trouble between two such different men and warned against the creation of rival power centers at the dawn of a presidency.
Donald Trump got elected with a pretty broad coalition of perspectives and views around the country. So all of that needs to be reflected in the White House. But I think the White House runs well only if there is one chief of staff clearly in charge.
Chris Whipple interviewed all the living chiefs of staff for his forthcoming book, The Gatekeepers, How the White House Chiefs of Staff Define Every Presidency.
From Watergate to Iran-Contra to the war in Iraq to the rollout of Obamacare, the chief of staff really makes a difference between success and failure. And so one of the critical things is not only who becomes chief, but whether that chief is empowered to, among other things, be the honest broker of information and to speak truth to power.
Another point of potential conflict between Mr. Priebus and Bannon is House Speaker Paul Ryan. A fellow Wisconsinite, Priebus is among Ryan's closest friends in politics. At Breitbart, however, Bannon championed Ryan's primary challenger.
Yeah, so that's like a big battle brewing, no doubt about it. And Paul Ryan, of course, is up for speaker again. I should be able to tell you what happened last night, but I can't. I haven't seen it in my inbox this morning. They were going to nominate him. Maybe they did last night, and I just don't know about it. And, of course, members of Congress are a little bit, it seems to me there were 30 of them who opposed his speakership last time. Remember that Tim Hulskamp from Kansas was targeted by that same House leadership and all of their money for defeat because he opposed Paul Ryan so openly, wanted him to be replaced over this very issue. And so there were some other stalwarts there as well, but now it looks as though they are wavering. You know, Mike Pence is a good friend of Paul Ryan's. Mike, for all of the good things about him, has his feet in both camps. There's no question about it. He is much more of a political, let's see, operative certainly than Steve Bannon, who was not one at all. Steve is a red meat conservative. And yes, he did absolutely go after Paul Ryan and in support of his opponent for the very reason that Paul Ryan is a supporter of open borders. I want to read to you something from Julia Hahn, who is a writer for Breitbart. She follows the immigration issue. And she says, let's see. According to Pew polling data, 92% of the GOP electorate is opposed to Ryan's expansionist immigration agenda. One of the things that he did in 2015, he promised Mo Brooks from Alabama that he would not bring up any major immigration legislation while President Barack Obama was still in office. And yet quickly he broke his promise, quadrupling the controversial H-2B guest worker program in his omnibus spending bill, which immigration attorney Ian Smith explained would disproportionately hurt America's most vulnerable workers by allowing them to be replaced by temporary foreign workers. So Paul Ryan has broken his promises to his own members of the House, and I don't know what's going to happen. He's got Pence to defend him. He's got Steve Bannon to oppose him, and then they're rushing this nomination for him as Speaker, but the actual vote won't take place in January. As I understand it, he only needs to lose 20 members of Congress to lose the speakership. So I honestly don't know what's going to happen with that. But that's just an interesting dynamic that's happening even as we speak. And here's an interesting story. This is from LifeZ, which is Laura Ingraham's outlet. By the way, Laura's being considered for press secretary. Wouldn't that be something? Can you see Laura handling the press? I'd like to see that, actually. I would really like to see that. I love her. Listen, I like listening to Laura. I think she's got a ton of wisdom, and she certainly has grit, and she can certainly handle the press, so that would be an interesting turn of events. All right, so here's a story. Border agents are bracing for a surge in illegal immigration at the southwest border as people race to get into the United States before the door shuts, meaning when President Trump takes his oath of office in January. At the same time, the head of the union representing 16,500 U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents says that agents are likely to push back against the directives of outgoing political appointees of President Obama. They have a new boss, and they know it. They need to endear themselves to him. You can expect to see CBP pushing back and holding those people, said Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council. They're going to want to make it look like they're in lockstep with Trump. We're already seeing it now. And so, remember, they've been told to turn a blind eye. In fact, one of them says at the end of this article, let me see if I can find this, Judd predicted the agents would be more aggressive in trying to determine if those caught at the border are telling the truth about their residency. We didn't even question them in the past. It was taken at face value. So they're probably going to disregard those orders and begin to sort of look toward this new policy of being stricter on the border. And I think most of us are very grateful for that. And another interesting story, Vladimir Putin called Donald Trump to congratulate him. We know that, but they also vowed to tackle ISIS together. And let me read this. This is from the UK Mirror. Less than a week after the billionaire's election, the Kremlin said Putin called Trump yesterday to begin negotiations over how best to tackle terrorism. The Russian is reported to have said he is ready for dialogue with the U.S. on the basis of mutual respect, non-intervention into each other's internal affairs. According to the news agency, Kremlin, Putin, and Trump have agreed to work to channel bilateral relationships into constructive cooperation to combine efforts to tackle international terrorism and extremism and to continue contact by telephone and to work towards meeting in person. Very interesting that Vladimir Putin and President-elect Donald Trump are vowing to fight together to defeat ISIS. Oh, I should read you what the ISIS head of ISIS is saying. He's pretty upset about this. He says that Trump is a complete maniac who will aid the terror group's cause. He talks about how this will help them recruit. Does that sound like that's what the Muslim Brotherhood says here all the time? That's what Hillary Clinton repeats, and so does President Obama. Well, we'll see how coming down hard on ISIS helps them to recruit. I'm all in favor. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.